Hello and welcome to episode 151 of Speak BC for May 15th, 2022. I'm Anne.
I'm Marjolaine.
And I'm Shannon.
Yay!
Hi!
Hi, Marjolaine, welcome back. It feels like it's been so long since you've been on the show.
You're right. But it was so fun to listen to everyone reacting to the movie finally. So yeah, I feel like I was involved because every time you listen to people that you were waiting for reaction, you feel a bit included too. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love the last one when you checked all the things that we got right or wrong. And I'm really, really proud of our chilling nude case because, I did a lot of research about that and I was so, so proud of it.
Yeah, we really blew that guy right open, didn't we? Like, we knew exactly what he was going to be used for.
Yes.
Listen, I don't know how other people watched the movie because if I didn't know... like anything about the chillin, I'd be like, I don't know what's happening.
Well, I was kind of wondering, like, that's something I was kind of wondering, like, because Chris is like a quote unquote normie. He's not as deep in the weeds as I am about anything. And so to me, all of this makes sense. I'm like, oh, they're on the Great Western Express. This is happening because I've been neck deep in this for months. And then after the movie, I was like, did you understand any of that? And he was like, kinda.
Yeah,
my sister had trouble figuring out what this election was, what it was for.
Mm-hmm. That's a big thing, I think.
But that's not what we're here to talk about today.
No. That is not what we're here to talk about today. In fact, what we are here to talk about is our amazing Patreon supporter, Allie F. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you, Allie. Always. So let's get into the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as $1 a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees. And how?
Just a few short things. First of all, Marjo was on Aloha Mora.
What?
Yay, tell us
so
about
cool.
it.
Yeah, since I was off from Speak Beastie, I needed to talk about Fantasy Beasts more. So yeah, of course. I don't remember how long was the episode, but more than 2 hours, I think. So,
yeah. It'd be like that.
It was a long recording.
So can you give us a little bit of a sneak peek as to what you all discussed?
Yes. Actually, we covered all the three movies, so that's why it was so long. And it was really fun. And it was also so fun to talk with Rex again. So an old Beastie alumni. So, so fun. And we talked about every movies, our favorite characters, our favorite beast, and different things. And we talk more generally about the franchise. And it was really, really interesting. Talk about a lot of things.
Awesome. Well, listeners, if you want to check that out as well, there will be a link in the show notes so you can give that a listen.
So then our kind of main piece of news, I guess, is that the Warner Brothers studio tour in Hollywood has added costumes from Secrets of Dumbledore. So they have Theseus, Newt, Dumbledore, Lally, and Jacob's costumes and wands.
Yeah.
Lots of coats, very beautiful. They're all set up. So they've tweeted a picture, so you can find a picture on the WB Studio Tour Hollywood Twitter.
Oh,
and they all
good.
Have like a screen poster of the character behind the costume, so you know exactly who it's matched up for. And then all the wands are in a case with little signs.
Yeah. And if I remember, they have a similar display in the Lifton Studio Tour. But for Lally, they have the dress, the golden dress, not the the coat.
So, yeah.
And then Marja wanted to just make sure that we all saw the Chilin designs that were on merchandise. There's a bunch of new Fantastic Beasts merchandise
on finally.
EMP UK. A lot of this clothes are really cool.
Oh my god, that Kowalski's backpack!
Yeah!
Yes, there is the Kowalski Bakery Loungefly backpack and wallet. I think that's available other places too.
Yeah, no, I shared EMP but because it's also available in France, but I'm sure the...
Someone... Oh my god, there's so much stuff!
Yeah!
They have, it's a dress in spot, it's like the same cut as Lally's golden dress, but it's in black and it's shorter. It's really cool.
It's really cute!
But yeah, there's some like shirts and there's a bag with the Chilin on it. There's Niffler's shoes.
But yeah, I think the Chilin design is the one that we see the most on merchandise. And I was looking for merchandise because I felt like we didn't saw a lot for this movie, but finally they are out and a lot of chilling. So yeah
there's some stuff at Universal too, at the theme parks.
Oh, that makes sense.
That there's a lot of stuff for the Hogshead, and then there's stuff that features like an image of each of the main beasts in this movie. So it has the Chilin and obviously like the Niffler and Bowchuckle, and then like Manticore baby crab.
And I saw also they have a t-shirt in EMP, but they also have, I saw in other store, the Ministry of Magic, the Brazilian Ministry of Magic logo, which is absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And they have it on the t-shirt, but I'm sure I saw it on other things like mugs or
things.
It's so pretty, really, really nice.
Yeah, I think I've seen that elsewhere too.
And I don't remember seeing it in a movie, but I guess Santos has it. But maybe on the Santos banner? I don't remember.
I know that Eduardo Lima designed it because he's tweeted about it, but I think you're right. I don't think it ever shows up in the movie.
Yeah, I don't think so. Still cool. It's cool that you get designs that weren't in the movie still showing up on merchandise.
Yeah.
Well, so that's it for the Phoenix Register. Nothing huge. Some little things. Wanted you to know.
I'm not me just wondering if they shipped the US because I need that shirt. Ugh, I don't think they do. Single tier. I'll have to get someone more overseas.
It might be available elsewhere too.
Yeah probably. But
I gotta do some digging.
I will be in Europe in September, so I will. Hopefully they will still have it at that time, and I will be able to spend too much money acquiring it.
Girl, if we are really too afraid, we can manage something and I can save it for you. And because we might meet, I think.
But that's the plan.
That's the plan.
Crazy.
Okay, so let us move on to the owl pose, because we have some owls.
Love to see it.
We got a couple of responses to SpeakBeastie at Gmail. So from Hadley, she says, "Hey, SpeakBeastie, I have a thought about the date this movie is set in. You mentioned the signs that said 1932, which is about 6 years later than Crimes of Grindelwald. On the Wizarding Express, I think that's what it's called, Newt says something about Bunty being indispensable, and she says she has been Newt's assistant for 8 years. Bunty met Newt at a book signing, and his book was released just before COG. So I think that the 1932 date is correct, and Lolly might just have been wrong, and Jacob was too confused to correct her. I give the film 4 out of 5 Nifflers. Thanks for making the show." And I agree with you, Hadley. 1932 makes everything make sense.
The 8 years for Bunty is still too long, but for the rest it...
Yeah, I mean, they definitely just did not think through...
The timeline.
But
yeah, in my head too, that's why I didn't catch the first time the 1 year later, and I was pretty sure it was around this date.
Mm-hmm.
32.
6 years feels... a little like too long for me, but
It's
a year or two. Yeah. At least a year between the last movie and this movie. Not that these three movies have been a full year.
Yeah, I think if I'm remembering, like, it's 1932 will be, I think, is it September of 27 that COG takes place in? No, because first one is December of 26, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like fall 27.
Okay, so then 5 years, that's just still, I mean, maybe Bunty is just blinded by love and is like, it's definitely been three more years than it actually has.
Yeah, I think in Nalohomora we had a very funny discussion about that, about these 8 years and timeline and
yeah
and making a theory that maybe I think I had the theory that Bounty used a time turner and just to relive every hour that she is with Newt over and over again. So in every scene that you have Bounty, actually you have several Bounty hiding in the background, just reliving the moment. And that's why it's 8 years for her.
That's why Bounty was hiding behind the counter.
I was just thinking that. Different Bounty. That's it. She's like, oh no, another Bounty's going to show up soon.
That's canon now.
Agreed. Yeah. No, that's it. That's it. Stamp canon. Then from Jerry C, we also got a comment. After listening to episode 150, a couple of comments. First of all, the corn that was stuffed into the cow at the German castle would have been wheat, or perhaps rye, for whatever the most common grain crop of the region. Maize, or what is considered corn in the U.S., came from the New World and would not have been used. And you are 100% correct. I'm pretty sure it says corn on the website, but that might have just been Google Translate taking whatever it was and making it corn instead. And I just... It's on the website! Next, for use of comma... Check out page 52 of The Secrets of Dumbledore movie magic book. Quote, he has a brooch containing a picture of his half-sister, Leta Lestrange. For him, it is a memento from his life. And I bet somehow he can look at this and get her memories back / keep his focus on being anti-Grindelwald. While the movie magic book doesn't replace the screenplay in providing answers, it does provide some good clues.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I wish that we had learned about that in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I still haven't got the chance to get the movie magic because it just came out this week in France, I think. So, but I know, yeah, there is some interesting piece. I didn't heard about this camera detail, but I heard another thing about the way they described the scene between Dumbledore and Credence. It's the way they describe it is, I mean, in French, the translation is weird, but it was pretty interesting, quite confusing, but I loved it. It was all this mirror, city, and they tried to explain it, but but yeah, I want to get this book, and I'm sure we will go back to it with all the little details that are in it. But I'm interesting, about this picture that Gemma has.
Yeah.
Yeah, once again, I really wish we'd seen that, because the way the movie treats Leta right now, she's literally erased from his memory, and then she never comes up again.
Yeah.
So.
Very weird.
Well, thanks for writing in, Hadley and Jerry. We appreciate your input.
Yeah.
And if anyone else has any thoughts about anything, please feel free, shoot us an email, speakbeastie@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes. So, time to move to the main discussion?
Yes.
Let's do the thing. I'm so excited for this.
Yeah. I think that's the discussion I'm waiting to have since we learned that Mads Mikkelsen was cast as Grindelwald.
Oh, man. This has been a discussion a couple years in the making.
Yeah. And finally, we can discuss his version of Grindelwald. So, yeah. Exciting. And to start the discussion, we also had a few weeks ago, a fascinating interview from the Hollywood Reporter, and we will give the link in the show notes. And it was a long article with quite some interesting pieces, not all about Fantastic Beasts. It was about Mads Mikkelsen and his career, and they talk about Indiana Jones at the end. So yeah. A lot of exciting things, but yeah, a lot of things about his experience. And he talked about the actor's change and the process. And he said, I quote, it was quite chaotic. And yeah, actually, he doesn't give a lot of detail in this interview, but from another interview that we have in the behind-the-scenes clips that we will talk a lot today, he says a bit more about the casting process that is as fast as we learned it, actually, because he said, I got a phone call on a Friday, and I flew to London on a Monday. So wow. That was really fast.
Listen, some actors could not. They just, but Mads Mikkelsen can.
Yeah. And David Yates said something, almost the same thing. He said that day between the crew, when talking of casting Mads on the first day, and gave the script to Mads on Saturday. And I guess it was a Monday so, after that.
Wow. On Thursday, they were like, let's cast Mads Mikkelsen. On Friday, they were like, hey, Mads Mikkelsen, you're in our movie. On Saturday, they sent him the script, and then on Monday, he flew to London.
That is so fast. Can you imagine living that life? You're like, I mean, not that Mads Mikkelsen isn't busy or whatever, but you're just living your best Mads Mikkelsen life, and then suddenly you're like, well, guess I'm in London now.
Yeah. And I don't remember, but it was... Was it in the middle of the pandemic, or was it just before?
No, this was... I feel like it was the right height before. Of the pandemic, because... I remember not having a lot else to do besides refresh, look for the official casting announcement.
Yeah. So, yeah, that adds to the crazy of it, but yeah. And so, of course, it's not a surprise, but he said that he didn't have a chance to talk to Depp about the role, but he wanted to, and he would be happy to, I quote, clean the room with him. So, yeah, that's interesting. But more strange, I guess, he didn't talk to Rowling at all. And That's weird, because I think Rowling talked to Depp and Jud Law and a lot of other casts. So maybe it was because it was the middle of the pandemic. We need to remember that. But
true. It definitely feels like WB is also trying to distance themselves from her.
Yeah.
As much as they can without actually doing it.
And yeah,
but still, it is strange that she wasn't even like, I want to talk to him.
Yeah, just a phone call or something.
Like unless that. She was, and they were like, no, but that would be weird.
So, I quote the article because it's really interesting. So, I quote, Mikkelsen says he wanted to ask Rowling why exactly the fascistic Grindelwald hates non-wizards so much that he wants to subjugate all muggles. And I quote Mads, I'd like him not just to be instantly demagogic, he said. The actor invented his own backstory for the characters instead. My reason is that something happened to his entire family when he was a child that explains the hate he carries around, he adds. It's a fantastic, detailed, complex universe Rowling's created, and I love to hear her thoughts on it. I hope I will do more than this one film. So,
fingers crossed.
Yeah. He created an old background because Rowling didn't give it to him, but he didn't need it. He just created it. So
I'd be curious to know more about what, if he has more details in his head about this background, because I would think he does, but he doesn't want to say it and make people think, oh, this is the canon now.
Right.
But I want to know what he thinks.
Yeah. And that's, it can work with what we know. Because we have very few detail about Grindelwald's background. We just know that he probably doesn't have a lot of relatives because he had to go to his aunt in Hogshead, in Godric's Hollow when he was sent out from Durmstrang. So, yeah.
Yeah, and we know that he's had these inclinations for a long time. Like, even before, in school, I want to say before he met Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess we don't know anything about his parents.
Yeah.
And he... About whether or not they're even alive.
Yeah, true. And he definitely... I think that his... Grindelwald's hate for muggles, he plays it far more harsh and far more personal in this movie than Depp was in the last one. Depp was more, we manipulate the opinion and we make people think that we love muggle and we just want to and in this one it's just like in the first scene when the woman goes away, he just has this look at his face, like, disgusting. And yeah, that's very, like, it's triggering something in him. So yeah, it works.
That first scene is so good. I know, so we're going to save talking about Dumbledore and Grindelwald for another episode, because that's a whole episode. But Mads did talk in this interview about, like, how important that first scene is to sort of set up their relationship in the movie. And it is such a just, like, they're just such two such good actors.
Yeah.
Doing this scene together, and it's like, wow.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, no, that scene isn't... Ugh.
Yeah, and I think it's a good time to give you the perfect quote that ends the interview. It was not Beastie-related, but I think it's we can relate it to this scene with Jude Law. He said, "I try to make every single scene the most important scene I ever done. I try to make the actor sitting across from me the most important and the best, and the best actors I've seen, I've ever been with, do the same. We try to make a magical moment." And I feel like he's talking about the scene that we have with Jude Law, because it's just what we got.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is so important. And clearly both, you can tell the history and the depth and everything that's just going on between them.
Yeah.
I want to read what, the interviewer who wrote the Hollywood Reporter article was James Hibbard, and the way he described that scene was, "At first the reunion plays like a meeting between a fractured couple, then one brings up politics, which always ruins everything, and there's a subtle change in Grindelwald's expression, from a mind that's open to shut, from an aura of light to dark." And it's like, yeah, perfectly describes the whole thing.
This article is so well written. You should all read it all the way through, because it's really, really well written.
And this is making me think as well. This scene makes the 1932 timeline make more sense, because we see Grindelwald at the end of 1927. He's mask on. He's still like, oh, we don't hate them. We just treat them differently. Then he's had 4 years to progressively lose his mind as he's been in hiding or whatever. And so now when we see him again in 1932, he's bonkers. Well, not, I shouldn't say bonkers. I should say bonkers. And a fascist, full fascist, mask off fascist. And if it's only been 4 months, that's less time for him to get more set in his ways.
Yeah. And it's also the effect of having more and more followers that, make you feel more and more entitled to your fascist ideas, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it's implied in the what I quoted earlier, but Matt sounds not 100% sure that there will be another movie. But for him, it's clear that the story is not finished and we need more. And I quote, "Obviously, I still have the Elder One, Mikkelsen points out, slipping out into first person for his character and referencing the Wizarding World's unbeatable weapon. And I quote Mads, "Dumbledore gets it in 1945. And the author said, "Accurate, 10 points for Slytherin." There's an epic confrontation that we haven't seen yet. So there is room for more. And yes, Maz, we need more.
Yes.
We really do. We need to see where this story goes.
Yeah, so that's pretty clear that if nobody is sure what will happen next. So even, they quote other things in the article. The author quotes one of other people. And yeah, you feel that they want to do more. And the plan with this one is to have the means to do more, but they are quite cautious. So yeah, that's all for this interview. But like I said, you can read all of it. It's pretty long, but really, really good read. Yeah, so we can go back to the movie and all the other scene that we can talk about. And I want to choose a way to discuss Grindelwald through how Grindelwald interact with other characters, and I think in this movie we really have the best manipulating, seducing, switching between, I don't know, sweet, gentle, and super scary, menacing, and that's what we have. And like we said, we will save Grindelwald Dumbledore's relationship for another discussion because there is a lot to talk about it.
Yeah, because we don't need this episode to be 4 hours long. And yeah, it will be if we get into all of that. But listeners, just so you know, there's a lot of YouTube links that Marge Lane did this incredible, like, deep linking, so it just pops right to the immediate time. All of the links are going to be in the show notes, so you'll be able to follow along with what we're talking about.
Yeah, because I will quote a lot of clips from the behind-the-scenes videos that we have on YouTube, because we can see some cutscenes that add few more detail about what we will discuss. And I want to start with Grindelwald and Queenie, and because that's typically the relationship that in the movie we have a lot of really juicy thing between Grindelwald and Queenie, but what was cut is even wow. We have this shot of Grindelwald gently wiping the tears from Queenie's cheek in the Berlin scene when Queenie just saw Jacob and is upset, and wow, and we see, and it's the moment when Grindelwald is saying to her, go see him. And for a moment, we thought that Grindelwald is talking about Jacob, but no, he's talking about Credence.
Of course, it's not Credence.
And yeah, we have this shot of Grindelwald just, yeah, wiping the tear from her cheek, and that's,
yeah.
Okay.
And then he kind of looks at it like, huh, interesting.
I've never seen one of these before.
What's that about?
Yeah. But I don't know what you think about the what we have on the movie, because I feel like it's the definition of this manipulation. Like, Grindelwald has this toxic dominance over Queenie and she can't escape, but he never, I don't know, make a move against her or talk harsh to her. He's always very gentle and soft, but in a very manipulating way, I think. But yeah,
it's like the scene definitely works without him like wiping the tear off, but I'm just interested in if there was even more than that, you know.
Yeah,
I really wish we'd gotten more of the interaction between the two of them, because we get an idea of what their interactions were like, because when Queenie mentions, he asked me to read people's mind, but I don't always. So what I wish we'd gotten to see more of him menacing her in this kind of gentle, sweet way, but still making clear that this is not a request, this is an order.
Yeah. We might have that in another cutscene, because it's guessing at this point, because we have a shot of her apparently leaving Normgard, because she's walking to the gate, and we have Grindelwald from the back, and just maybe he's stopping her from leaving Normgard. But and we have the same scene in another clip when we have Grindelwald, Kama, and Queenie in the same light in the same courtyard. So
yeah, and it looks like Grindelwald is, they're like talking to David Yates at the time, but Mads is like pointing the wand at her.
Yeah,
and they're talking about it.
Yeah, so
which is definitely more of a direct threat.
Yeah.
Although that could be a, oh, I can remove some memories for you
too. Yeah,
and she's like, no.
You know, I just remove Lita from Kama's mind. I can remove Jacob from your mind.
Yeah, it's 2-for-1 special. 2-for-free. Not a big deal.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. I wonder where that would have fallen in the movie.
Good question.
I want to watch this movie again.
Oh, shoot. That's something that should have gotten the Phoenix Register that, well, I'll say it now.
Okay.
It's going to be releasing to HBO Max at the end of the month, end of May.
Nice. Then I can watch it whenever I want.
Exactly. So 45 days for theatrical release. So I think Memorial Day weekend is the target date. So you'll be able to. Not Marjolaine, though, because you don't have HBO Max in France, right?
No, and I know it was in the Alohomora I'll explain too, but we have the media chronology that in France that we can't have movies so soon after they are released in theater.
Okay.
To save the exploitation in That's why we have so good numbers in France, because people go see the movie in theater, because they know that we don't have the movie until maybe a year later. Mm-hmm. No, maybe not a year later. Well, no, we have, I think we will have the DVD and Blu-ray in end of summer, maybe in August.
Okay. Well, anyway, so yes, I feel like Queenie's later face turn makes way more sense if we get more of an idea of the just because, like, we get the idea that it's just kind of creepy, but I wish we'd gotten the idea that it's more like just a more toxic atmosphere in Grindelwald that would be driving her away from him. Especially if it's 4 years, that's one thing. Maybe it makes sense that the atmosphere is not like heavily toxic, but if it's 4 months, then we need to see why she went from point A to point B so fast.
Yeah. I mean, we have the scene where she looks at Grindelwald killing the chilling, so...
Yeah.
I mean, that's enough, I think for her to...
No, fair enough.
But yeah, I agree that the toxic relationship could be even more developed. But I think we have... We have enough, but I would love to have more.
Yes. Yeah.
So, moving to another toxic relationship, Grindelwald and Credence. So, yeah, I for this part, I think Mads Mikkelsen followed quite what was established in the first two movies, because we have this fatherly relationship, like the first scene that when we have Credence bringing the chilling to Grindelwald, the way he touched the cheek again, but like Credence is holding the arm, like, yeah, I need the touch, I need to feel accepted, I guess. So yeah, that's but again, I'm not sure we have enough. It's connected to the fact that we don't have Credence a lot in this movie, so...
Yeah, it did remind me a lot of Graves. There were definitely moments where you could tell, like, they were doing that on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which, like, is good, because that was the same person.
Yeah.
Right, like, in that one scene, like, Grindelwald touches his cheek and Credence still closes his eyes and kind of leans into the touch. And it doesn't matter if it's been 4 years or 4 months. It's still sad that he is still that thirsty to be touched by anyone.
Yeah, that's sad. But it's with Credence that we see Grindelwald has his first burst of anger also. Because he's... And that's the... I mean, it's just after he resurrected the chilling in the death pool. So, yeah, it's a very weird and dark moment. And just after that, he saw the fact that Credence failed to see that there is another chilling, and he just jumped at Credence's throat. And that's the first time that we see violence from Grindelwald, except... killing the chilling, of course, but that's...
It's the first time we see violence against another...
Yeah.
Not necessarily another person, but another person on his side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because most of the time he's just manipulating, but that was like, yeah, full lashing out.
Yeah, because I was actually surprised, but I liked it, that he didn't blame Credence for failing to kill Dumbledore. He was so chill that he felt, I mean, yeah, it's the when he saw him and told Queenie to go see him and say him that it's okay. It's fine.
So. I wonder if it was a situation similar to like Voldemort sending out Draco to try and kill Dumbledore. It's less a, I believe in you, this is something I think you are capable of, and more of a lesson in humility for Lucius and for Credence.
I don't know, because the whole point of the last movie was, I need Credence because in Obscurus is the only thing that can kill Dumbledore.
That is true.
And so
I guess I kind of see it as like, oh, well, we'll have another opportunity to kill Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I knew that you might not be able to do it this time, but that I accounted for that. I did not account for two chillins and one of them not being in my possession.
Yeah. My first...
Surely next time my dying goth will be able to take care of the world's most powerful wizard.
Yeah, he didn't seem to bother about Credence's health deteriorating.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But, yeah.
Which he really should have. This is a powerful kid.
Yeah.
You don't want him to just keel over. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, my first interpretation about why he wasn't so upset was he was relieved that Dumbledore was still alive, but that's a discussion for the relationship.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Grindelwald and Camel. I'm really sad that it wasn't more developed because the start was really good between them.
Yeah. And oh, yeah. Like, they only really had the one scene together, didn't they?
Two scenes. And the two scenes are really good, but they are so isolated from anything else. Because we also have the second one when they gather all the followers to go to
Bhutan. At the dinner.
And he said to Kama something like, I know you're... you are at your place, or you will have to... I don't know what he said exactly, but it was too vague to mean something very deep. But if we had more of Kama's storyline, it might have been a more efficient scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it felt like Grindelwald never fully trusted him.
Yeah.
Because, it felt kind of like, you know, he was like, prove yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But... you didn't get to see more of, like, how Grindelwald felt about him being around. And, like, what was Kama doing there?
Yeah, did he actually get any intel?
I think his job was just to then show up at the end and take everybody else out. I don't know if his job was to get any intel or anything. But, like, he, you know, was he doing that just in case while he was there? Or was he just chilling?
Was he chilling with the chillin?
Yeah, like, I'm just curious. I would have loved to see scenes with Kama and Queenie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But...
well, because, again, that would have been more of a way to establish Queenie's true loyalties as well, because maybe she finds Kama somewhere he's not supposed to be, or he's thinking something, and then he realizes, oh no, Queenie's here, and they kind of make eye contact, and she just, you know, kind of winks and leaves or does something to indicate, no, I'm cool now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why we are missing this scene in that we are talking earlier with Queenie, Grindelwald, and Kama on the gate of Nurmagard, because, I really want to know what was in this scene, because, that might... add for Queenie's and Grindelwald relationship, but also with Kama's. And the other one that I want to mention that we didn't have much, it was Grindelwald and Fogel. And I think too much was cut again. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, Fogel was a very interesting character. And we need to know why he turned to Grindelwald, and we don't.
Mm-hmm.
We don't.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because it's like, just in terms of understanding the plot of the movie, it was not clear to me for a bit whether Vogel and Grindelwald had, like, talked and were actively working together. Like, that became clear, but since you never saw that, it was like, or is Vogel just like, Grindelwald seems cool to me? Like,
because the scene when he said why they need to let Grindelwald run, and his speech was a politician's speech. It was not a Grindelwald supporter speech. It was like, we need to make the supporter of Grindelwald democratically fail, and it will end this rise if they will let him run and fail at an election. And so that was a good start, because it was foolish of him, but we have that in real politics. So
that was very like, okay, so maybe he's just like trying to, you know, make smart political moves that aren't necessarily smart. But then it was like, oh no, he's helping Grindelwald.
Yeah, and we have this...
he has the chillin now.
And we have this assistant, I forgot her name, but at one point I thought she was on Grindelwald's side, and she was influencing Fogel to do what Grindelwald's need, but... she was definitely on Grindelwald's side, but...
Oh, yeah.
We don't know if...
It's like Carolina or something, right?
I don't... Okay.
No, Henrietta. Henrietta is her name.
Yeah. Okay. So, again, another one that I don't think she shared any dialogue or scene with Grindelwald, but...
You are correct. I think she was at the top of the stairs with everyone else at the Chilin scene, but
she was not.
I don't think she ever had a scene one-on-one with Grindelwald.
Yeah. Because another cut scene that we see in the behind-the-scenes clip is a scene in Normagard's library, and I love that because we have a clear shot of this set that we almost don't see in a movie, and it's absolutely gorgeous. This library
like a bottle of Lysol sitting on the desk. Maybe that's why they had to cut it.
Maybe.
No, I'm sure that was just out of this shot.
But yeah, and we have in this scene we have Grindelwald, and we have also Fogo and
Vinda.
Vinda, of course. And I didn't add Vinda to the discussion, but please.
Honestly, that's because that could be like Vinda as Agent of Chaos and Vinda as with Grindelwald. That's a whole discussion in and of itself. Sure.
We got a lot of Vinda and Grindelwald in the last movie, and I don't feel like anything really changed between it being Johnny Depp and Mads Mikkelsen.
I feel like she's a bit more protective than she was in the last one. In the last one, it was more Grindelwald trying to contain her excitement.
Sure.
And in this one, it's more the, not the opposite, but it's more her like impressed by how fast Grindelwald is rising to being open to the world. Yeah, she's definitely excited to be here.
Oh, yeah, no, and I not to, like, talk too much about My Beautiful Wife or anything, but I feel like she, in this movie, she is, Grindelwald is playing more to her strengths, whereas before, he'd be like, no, no, Vinda, we don't say the quiet part loud, we say the quiet part quiet. This part, he was like, and aim and fire. Bye, Vinda, have fun!
Yeah.
But also in this scene is Credence.
Ah, yeah.
We see him lurking in the doorway.
So we definitely have Fogo in the middle of all Grindelwald's supporters, I guess. So, yeah, that would be, I guess, the scene where we discover that he's on his side.
Yeah. I don't know if it was like they decided they wanted to keep it vague or they thought it was clear without this scene. I don't know.
Yeah.
I wonder what their reasoning was. I don't know, maybe this scene just sucks. We don't know what happens.
Maybe they just never got one good take of it.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it would be interesting if I'm totally creating another version of the movie, but if this scene happens after Fogel choose to allow Grindelwald to run for the election, but wasn't at this point a supporter of an active ally, and they just had a meeting to organize the election, I guess, and that's there that Grindelwald managed to get him on his side and to get him on the Chilling plot that they need to use a Chilling, and that he managed to have one, but he's dead, but not for long. Yeah, I don't know, maybe it was... Yeah, I don't know.
I like the idea that Grindelwald invites a politician over to his home and is like, we need to talk about this. I was thinking we could revive this tradition of a baby Chilin being born and, you know, the Chilin picking who's... And Vogel's like, that's great, but there hasn't been a Chilin born for a long time. And Grindelwald's like, well, come to my basement.
Well, I have a dead one here. Hold on. I know what you're thinking. I'm going to bring it back to life.
Yeah.
We'll probably never know, because nobody releases deleted scenes anymore.
We have some for Crimes of Grindelwald, so we can hope.
Yeah, it's true. We did get quite a few deleted scenes.
We didn't have the croissant scenes, but yeah, we might.
We had a lot of scenes that should have been in the movie.
True.
Yes.
So yeah, obviously we'll talk more about Grindelwald's relationship in another episode, but I want to talk a bit about his power, his magic, because we see some interesting things, and the first thing is the visions, because we had the visions in the last one. It was only mentioned in the first one, not shown, but the last one he used obviously the a hookah skull. So he smoked his vision, I guess. And in this one, he didn't use any smoke. He just saw the vision appear in different reflection. And I thought it was an absolutely genius idea to make it just very...
Yeah,
very subtle and very, yeah.
And just... I felt like they were implying that this was because of the Chilean blood.
It wasn't, yeah. I think, because...
But it, yeah. Well, so they said, like, the Chilean blood lets you, like, see the future, and that's why they have to,
when
you know.
Are you sure they said that?
I'm pretty sure he said something along the lines of...
These little eyes have seen so much, or these little eyes see everything. It's something along those lines.
But I mean, Dumbledore says something about this. He said that about the eyes,
but I think it was these little eyes see everything in you. Like, they see who you are, not the future, but...
So, yeah, Grindelwald slaughtered the newborn Chilean to harness its ability of precognition. But I thought that was weird because I'm like, but they've already like kind of said that he can see.
So where does the quote come from?
This is from the Harry Potter wiki. But where does it come from? I mean, that's just how they've described it on the wiki.
I'm pretty sure it's not true because the vision appears in reflection.
I think that is true because Dumbledore said something to that effect. And I'm trying to find, like, a synopsis or a quote or something. But no, well, Dumbledore says something about, like, specifically that the reason that they have to be unpredictable is because he's going to use the Chilean's blood.
No, because he can see the future.
Yes, he says that.
But it's not because of the Chilean that he sees future.
No, he says that's why. I'm not saying it makes sense. But I'm saying he says that. Why? Here, this is an article from Screen Rant. He harvested the Chilean's power and used it to enhance his own seer abilities. They say this. Yeah. If only we had a screenplay.
Where is the screenplay?
No, I'm right. I know I am.
Yeah,
I'm
but
not
I'm
saying f- it was good. I'm not saying it was well done, but
yeah, I mean, it can explain why he now can see vision in reflection that he needed smoke before, but
because the Chilean is letting him see visions in a different way.
Yeah, because
according to director David Yates, the Chilean is able to see into a person's soul and is to... Okay, we already knew that. That's not the quote I was looking for. Anyway.
So Lita's last big movement before she dies is to smash the hookah. And something that Chris and I were talking about after we rewatched it in between our Secrets of Dumbledore watching was that maybe Grindelwald uses the hookah to focus his visions and then be able to show them to everyone.
Yeah.
Because when he's got the hookah, he is able to consistently present his visions and also consistently channel the visions so that he can see them as well. But now that the hookah's been smashed, he doesn't have that channel anymore. So now that's why he sees them in reflective surfaces. I wonder if that's just like, he's always seeing visions in reflective surfaces, but we only see the ones that are plot relevant.
Yeah, that's kind of what I would think.
Yeah.
That's what I understood too. The hookah was just to show the vision to others.
Yeah.
But before that and after that, he continued to have visions through reflection. And so, of course, yeah, the first one is in the Chilean's blood. So, yeah, I think in this one, he see Newt and Theseus meeting Dumbledore in Hogsmeade, something like that. So the second one, I'm not sure what he see, but it was in Nomogad's window while he was looking at Credence and the Phoenix, and I think he sees Dumbledore in Berlin, but I don't remember exactly.
That sounds right.
And on another window in the cars in Berlin, he see Jacob menacing him with a wand. And so that's why he was absolutely not impressed when Jacob did that. And the last one is in the pool, and he sees the second Chilean with Newt and Dumbledore. So, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, this is all definitely way better than the weird hookah thing.
Yes.
I mean, the hookah was very effective for the the vision of World War II and...
Yes, that was cool.
Yeah, and the way to manipulate others with what he can see from the future, but he presented it with his idea of what we can do as wizards. But yeah, in this one, it's more used to... But it's confusing, but in the way that he's supposed to be, because he doesn't see everything, but he see what the other side is planning. So that's why that's why the plan from the other side needs to go in every direction, because he can see the main plan, and or maybe not the main plan, because I don't know, and I'm not sure that Jacob using the wand was the main plan, but I guess it was what Dumbledore was expecting when he kept. So yeah, I mean, for this example, I like the way it's presented, because obviously it's because Jacob was about to use the wand that everyone was distracted while Lali saved Santos. So yeah, but yeah, that's a cool effect. I like it. And the other big moment is the dark pool resurrecting the shilling.
Oh my god!
And yeah, quite impressive. That's the first time that we have this type of magic. He doesn't use a wand in that, right?
I don't think so.
No, I think he's just holding it.
And he says some spell, but...
Yes.
But yeah, that's... really interesting way to do magic with just without a wand, but using spell and using this liquid, I guess. That's, yeah, a mix of potion and incantation. That's interesting. So, yeah, cool dark magic. I hope we will have more.
Once again, I'm just kind of wondering, like, when he's, like, castle shopping, is he telling the real estate agent, I need to have a very dank basement. Like, real dank. And if it can have a pool in it, that would be cool.
Yeah. It does not have to be a nice pool. This is not for swimming.
No, I'm not going to be swimming in it. Don't worry. I mean, I will be, but like not alone, but not in a sexy way. Anyway, doesn't have to be a nice pool is my point here.
Yeah. But yeah, very powerful stuff. So, but he doesn't use the elder one so much.
I wonder if he does not know like how powerful it is, or he does, right?
He has it. Well, he used it against Dumbledore, so yeah.
But... And he uses it to take out Kama's memories.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a just like he knows when he doesn't need to use a wand, and he's trying to, you know, be more reserved about it.
But it's interesting that in the interview that we mentioned earlier, that Mads Mikkelsen is mentioning the Elder One, because the Elder One is not even mentioned. We see it, obviously, but nobody addressed the fact that he has the Elder One, I think. So, yeah. Then we are focused on the Blood Pact, but not the Elder One.
Well, I mean, again, how commonly well-known is the Elder Wand actually existing outside of a pretty select group of people? Like, there is talk of the Death Stick throughout wizarding culture, but I think a lot of people just think it's a story.
Yeah, I think so.
So most people probably would just be like, oh, that's a weird-looking wand anyway.
Yeah, and I wonder if does he know that he was facing the Elder Wand?
I don't remember.
Maybe he said, oh, you have a new wand. I don't know. Because he
nice
didn't
have... Nice wand, buddy. Where'd you get it?
I'm not sure, but he didn't had it when they first met, right?
No. I don't think so.
He got it later.
Yeah, not a long later, because he was really young when he stole it, but...
Yeah, I think Dumbledore doesn't know it's the Elder Wand.
Oh, that could be a cool plot for the next movie. Yeah, going back to the... Deathly Hallows.
I don't know. Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah. Cool. So, yeah. So, I have a question for you. What's your favorite Grindelwald scene in this movie? Maybe apart from the first one, because the first one is the best, but...
Man, that's a good question.
I mean, for me, yeah, it is definitely the scene in the coffee shop.
Yeah.
Like, it's so tense, and at the same time, it's a little bit sexy.
Yeah.
And there's, like, it just, the energy between the two of them just crackles, and you see who they are, and you see just the hurt that Dumbledore doesn't really get to show anyone. And then you get to see, I feel like both of them still, even now, can take off their masks a little bit, like show their inner selves a little bit to the other, because we see Grindelwald with the full nastiness and we see Dumbledore with his full vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then we really don't, like, we see that again with Grindelwald later when he's one, but throughout the movie, it's most of the time it's tucked away.
Yeah.
I like the dinner scene, which doesn't have, like, a ton of Grindelwald. He's, you know, there, and then he leaves. But, like, Mads Mikkelsen is always acting.
Yeah, and the way he looked at Jacob, like, hey, are you going to do something?
Really?
Can I help you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love this scene, too. I think my favorite quote is, who will love you now, Dumbledore?
Oh, it's so good.
I don't know if it's my favorite scene, but
Prince Hans of him.
That's, yeah. And I was never your enemy, not yesterday, not today. It was a cool line to leave the room. better than...
Literally off a cliff.
Yeah. Better than will we die just a little because we...
Oh my God. What was that about? Like, on the one hand, I never liked Johnny Depp as Grindelwald. Like, I wasn't... Like, I think... Okay, my point is, like, I didn't like Johnny Depp as Grindelwald. I don't know how much of that is Johnny Depp's acting versus I just don't like how they, like, wrote and portrayed Grindelwald in the first two movies. I think his look was too much, and
yeah,
I think he wasn't written the best.
I think he was written okay in movie two.
First movie, it was, like,
yeah, I mean, Graves, we had more Graves, and was Grindelwald, Graves, and it was pretty good.
Yes, it's true. Graves is Grindelwald I liked.
Oh, yeah, no, Graves is Grindelwald is great.
But yeah, then you, like, I mean, will we die just a little? Still don't understand, why?
And yeah, I didn't add a point about the look, but yeah, sure, we had a very different look, and I like that they, and I think they talk about it in the article. I don't remember.
They do, yeah.
They do.
The eye, that's really subtle, but if you look at it, it's have a reptilian vibe. And I didn't notice it, but now that they mention it, I thought it was just Mads Mikkelsen that looks always like that. But no, they did something very subtle in with the eye. So
I like how they still, you know, gave him a funky eye like the last movie, so it wasn't like inconsistent. But yeah, I think the way they did Grindelwald in the last two movies, he looked too much like his hair.
He was another
eyes,
Johnny Depp pale weirdo.
Yeah, it was like if you had done the eyes but not the like platinum blonde spiky hair, or vice versa. You know, but it was like distracting. But yeah, so I'm glad that they didn't do that on Mads. And even his costume, he just kind of wears suits in this, but it makes him, I mean, I think in a lot of ways, the way that they made him look in this movie just makes him seem more like a politician.
Yeah, and it's...
And like, aren't they the real villains?
But the
hot take, Shannon.
The funny thing is that the other, except Vogel, who also has a regular suit, I think.
Yeah.
But Santos and Liu, they have more a wizarding look, I guess.
Yeah, more
because
like
they have a more from their country, but not only from their country. It has this wizarding twist. I mean, I don't know how to describe it, but it's very colorful and very like Santos has. And then she has this cape almost.
Yeah.
So
I love that.
Yeah. That's
It's interesting. But it's just, you know, it leaves more room for Mads' interpretation of the character because you don't have all of these trappings on him.
Yeah.
And that's also maybe just because he joined so late, so they didn't have time to.
Yeah.
They didn't have time.
They're like, just bring your suits.
Yeah.
Just bring some fun ties. It'll be fine.
Yeah, because I guess Depp was supposed to have the a more extravagant costume, and it was definitely not gonna make the fit for mass. So, okay, we absolutely have no time to create something else. So, Colin, what can you do? And he said, cloak. I am not a coat, I guess, a regular coat. I can't do that in a weekend. So, yeah, that's how I imagine it.
Well, Mads Mikkelsen's pretty cool, I think.
Definitely, yeah.
I'm glad he is Grindelwald.
Yeah, we need more, so...
Yes!
Come on!
Yeah, so let's get that movie for going announcement soon, please. Thank you.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, please.
So, we're going to battle.
Yeah!
Oh man, normally we have two people, but Marjo, I guess you're it. You're gonna have to be our decider.
The only judge.
Oh man, no pressure.
That's easier because then you have no ties, you know. I trust Marjorie's judgment, just like the Chillin.
Yeah, the Chillin would definitely. If we were like, okay, Chillin, which of us should judge the Battle of the Beast? The it's gonna go right for Marjorie, and you're like her.
How do we do this again?
Okay. So, Marjolaine, as you're gonna be busy during this.
Yeah.
You're gonna count down 3, 2, 1, and then Shannon and I are gonna shout out our beasts. Shannon gets a minute to defend their beast. I get a minute to defend my beast. Then we get we each get a minute rebuttal, and then after that, you make the final call.
Cool.
Battle of the Beasts. Beasts.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, beast!
Graphorn.
Grindelo!
So what did you say?
What did you say?
Graphorn. Or is it pronounced Graphorn?
I was thinking about the Graphorn.
Graphorn versus Grindelo.
Oh, this is going to be interesting.
Okay.
Words.
So, Anne, you go first. 1 minute, go.
Okay, well, Grindelos are persistent little dudes. They will grab you and they will drag you down into the water and drown you. And then probably eat you. I'm not 100% sure what they do with you after that. I didn't do any research. But I feel like if a Grindelo was able to get up on a Graphorn and get at them long fingers around a leg or something and then drag it in, that it'd be over. The Graphorn would be like, well, this is it. Can't swim. And the Grindelo would have it for the win, in my opinion. I have nothing else.
Okay, great. Shannon, okay. Your turn.
So, Graphorns, I mean, they can repel most spells, but I understand that that probably wouldn't be relevant to Grindelos. I don't think Grindelos cast spells. They have skin tougher than that of dragons. But since your, main argument is that, oh, they could be dragged down underwater. I don't know how Graphorns do in water, but they do have a bunch of, tentacles on their face. Don't know what those do either, to be honest. But they've also got a bunch of horns. So I think that they could probably, get their tentacles around Grindelo. They're much bigger. Could throw that Grindelo around, hit it with their horns. I mean, they're very big. So to that point, they probably would sink in water. But I think at the very least, they would take the Grindelo down with them.
Cool. Yeah. We do a second one, right? I don't
know.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know what else there is to say, okay. But I'll give it a shot.
I mean, if you want to react to her arguments, I guess.
Well, no, because I'm agreeing with her pretty much. Because if the Graphorn realizes the Grindelo is there, it's over for the Grindelo. They're just going to get stepped on.
Yeah.
But if the Grindelo does get the drop on the Graphorn, which maybe not impossible, I can grab them dry. Again, I think it also depends on how close they are to water. Because if it's dragging them for anything more than maybe 2 feet, it's not going to end well for the Grindelo. But... Yeah, I feel like if the Graphorn comes to a watering hole or whatever, or a pond, and the Grindylo is like, snack time, and is able to grab the Graphorn and pull it in. That's not gonna, I think that's how it's gonna do it. So under a very specific set of circumstances.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the Grindylo has the upper hand here.
Shannon, do you want the last argument?
I mean, that's a very specific set of circumstances. This is a hard one, because why would the Grindylo and the Graphorn encounter each other?
Well, they're both European.
Yeah, but I mean, just like land-dwelling versus water-dwelling. Yeah, I mean, they're both very aggressive, from what I understand. I'm looking right now. Grindylos eat fish, algae, and small sea creatures. However, occasionally they would eat humans. I mean, okay, so I think they would maybe want to eat a Graphorn, yeah, if a Graphorn comes up to the water. But I think a Graphorn would just, yeah, step on them, stab them with their horns, just flick them. Grindylo would have to be real sneaky. I don't know how sneaky they are.
Yeah. Okay.
I feel like they're pretty dumb.
And I think if the Graphorn wanted to eat a Grindylo, like the Grindylo wasn't attacking the Graphorn, then that's it. The Graphorn would just be like, that's my snack. And the Grindylo's gone.
Great. Sorry, Anne, you kind of admitted defeat.
I know. I was going to say, so who won and why is it Shannon?
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. Your choice of Grindylo could work with different creature, but definitely not a Graphorn, I think. No, the Graphorn is quite, yeah. I'm not sure he can swim, but if he just, does a rhino can swim? I have no idea. But
I'm gonna look that up, hang on.
But if it can float, I mean, the Grindylo have no chance to drown it, so. Yeah. No, I think the...
Asian rhinos are excellent swimmers, but their African relatives are very poor swimmers. So I guess it depends on if it is African rhino or more of an Asian rhino.
Cool, yeah. No, but yeah, the Graphorn wins. Good job,
Yay!
Shannon. Good.
Yay, Shannon!
But good job, you too. You did your research about your champion, so yeah. Interesting.
Okay, so that's going to be it for this episode. Our podcast question this week is, what is your favorite Grindelwald scene from Secrets of Dumbledore? So you can answer that by dropping us an owl on any of our social media outlets or emailing us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. Don't forget to also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That really helps us out.
And once you are done leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie. On Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. You can also support the show at patreon.com/speakbeastie. We have cool stickers. Shannon just released the third of her four D&D character sheets. And so we are that much closer to me having to make good on my promise to hire a DM and do a one-shot, because these character sheets are sick. I am so excited about them.
Cool.
And I also spend way too much time photoshopping something for May the 4th that was then released for our Patreons.
I loved it so much.
So if you ever want to see my quality Photoshop work, that's quality with a K there, folks. Do y'all have anything else cool planned for Patreon coming up?
No.
Later this month, I'm going to a very cool event, the Imaginal, which is a very cool fantasy festival, I guess. So I will take pictures and make it a content, I think, because that's my favorite festival convention of the year. So really excited.
Oh, awesome. So that, all the more reason, patreon.com/speakbeastie. Join us and check it out. I think that wraps it up. I'm Anne.
I'm Marjolaine.
And I'm Shannon. Case closed.